This WebmasterRadio.fm program is made possible in part by the following.
Today's forecast calls for 6 to 12 inches, and temperatures will only be in the teens overnight, so bundle up and...
Imagine, you're planning your end-of-year reports, planning for next year. What are you going to do to monetize more in 2011?
We're going to have clear and sunny skies with a perfect day of weather for everyone coming to AFCON 2010.
Warm up your marketing strategies this December in our winter oasis for affiliate marketers. AFCON 2010 Florida, December 8th through 10th at the Fairmont Turnberry Isle Resort in Aventura, Florida. Sign up now at AFCON2010.com. That's AFFCON2010.com.
The opinions expressed on this WebmasterRadio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WebmasterRadio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Very glad to be back after a brief sabbatical. I'm here with Stever Robbins. Stever, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yes, indeed. You're the author of Get It Done, Guys, 9 Steps to Work Less and Do More, and who does not want some good advice from you?
I like to think no one, or everyone, or whatever the right answer is.
Well, this radio show will be the one audience that I'm sure that is going to be excited to hear from you. Tell me a little bit about the book itself, why you wrote it, and why it's going to make your life better.
Sure. The book itself, it covers 9 areas of your life, each of which is a way that people get stuck. And what I've done is I've organized 9 chapters, which are steps to overcome that kind of stuckness. The book came about, it's really based on my podcast. It's called the Get It Done Guy podcast. And I launched it as this teeny tiny little hobby. It was just a way for me to blow off some extra steam. And it hit number one in iTunes business category 3 weeks after we launched. So it was like, wow, people care about this stuff. And what the podcast, we just recorded the 150th episode of that. And some of the early episodes of the podcast, along with a lot of original material that I hadn't included anywhere else, is what ultimately became the book. And you know, you said, what will people get from reading it? The real thing I hope people walk away with is it really is possible to work less and get better, higher quality, faster results than you're getting right now. It's just a matter of, you've heard people say, don't work hard, work smart. This book is like all about, you know, who wants to work hard? I don't want to work hard. I want to work smart, get stuff done, and then go on with the rest of my life. And this book will help you do that.
I can't wait to learn more. And of course, we could spend the entire show talking about my productivity and management, but we won't do that. If you were to summarize in general the complexity that people face and the reasons that they aren't able to maximize productivity, what do you think the problems are?
The first chapter of the book is called Live on Purpose, and I think that encompasses almost the entire rest of the book in terms of what the problem is. The problem is that we have constructed systems around ourselves, we have tools, we have technology, all of which we invented to help us work faster and smarter, but in fact, we've forgotten that. So when we're looking to buy a handheld PDA, or whatever you want to call it, smartphone, we don't look at what will help me be most productive. What we look at is, ooh, I want the thing that has the fastest streaming videos so that I can distract myself better than I ever have before. And I'm like, well, it might be fun, but that's not the purpose you want the smartphone for. That, as far as I can tell, is essentially what's happened up and down and sideways through our economy, is we invent solutions for ourselves, but we never bother to make sure those solutions are connected to the problems we invented them to solve. And we end up, in fact, making more work for ourselves, not less, through the very solutions that we invent to help ourselves work better.
Is your book something that if I were to read it cover to cover over a weekend, and arrive at work on Monday morning, I would instantly be more effective and more on target with what I need to do and how to get it done.
Well, you would certainly arrive at work able to build a zombie army. I know that much. But if that's not what you're trying to do, well, like any book of this sort, it's not a matter of reading the material and understanding it. It's a matter of deciding to put it into practice. However, yes, one of the things I cared a lot about in writing this book, honestly, I'm not a big fan of these gigantic, big picture, 500,000-foot books that give you these grand concepts, but then when you try to figure out how to apply it in your life, you have no idea. Throughout the entire book, whenever I introduce a grand concept, I like to give a couple of examples. One example is usually funny, having to do perhaps with my lifelong desire to build a zombie army and take over the world. And then another one is going to be one that's really more applicable to you, you know? You have a radio show, you've got a whole bunch of guests you have to manage. How in the world are you going to do that? Well, guess what? Here's a way to get a piece of engineering graph paper. And using engineering graph paper, you can keep track of all of your guests. Things like that. So, yes, you will walk away from this book. In fact, you don't have to read it cover to cover. My goal is you should be able to read any two pages and walk away with something you can put into practice today immediately with a minimum of extra paraphernalia. Just walk right out, do it, find out if it works for you, and if it does, you will have saved time and be working more effectively, better, stronger, faster.
Hmm. Do you have any actual systems that you use to organize your people, places, and things that you need to be focused on and productive with? Do you have your own systems or recommend any in the book?
Oh, me personally? Now, mm-hmm. When you say systems, do you mean like technology systems or like mental
Could
systems?
Be. Or Could be notepads and papers, could be task lists every day, could be higher-end technology, that helps you keep track of things. How do you keep track of what you're supposed to do during the course of the day?
Well, I have a calendar, and the calendar is for anything that has a time attached to it. So the calendar, of course, has all my appointments. Other than that, there are two major tools that I use. I have a to-do list, and it may surprise a lot of people to know that my to-do list is on paper. I have just never found myself able to be effective with an electronic to-do list. I try it about once a year, and I abandon it about once a year. I keep the to-do list on paper. At the beginning of every day, I go through the to-do list, I scan it, and I pull out three or four things that I think are most important for me to get done that day, and I write those usually on a separate little sticky pad and just try to keep returning to that through the course of the day to make sure that I'm making progress on those items. I also, when I have blocks of free time, use a system called Autofocus 4, which was actually developed not by me, but by a man named Mark Forster in England. And it's a fabulous system for managing a to-do list that handles everything in your life. So I use that when there's no clear priority for the day. I use the Autofocus 4 system to just run through my to-do list over and over, getting stuff done and picking them off along the way. But there's a problem with that as the only system, which is, I don't know about you, but my to-do list, you know, if you think about forest versus trees, my to-do list is always in the trees. It's tiny things. Print out this document when I'm back to my desk. Return the following phone call. Fill out the following form. Complete the following profile. And that doesn't tell me. I may be, if I have a streamlined to-do system, I might be great at knocking stuff off my to-do list, but I might be knocking stuff on my to-do list that has nothing to do with any goals that I want to achieve. There's nothing that says the things on my to-do list are necessarily meaningful or are going to bring me towards the life, the career, the work results that I want. For that, I have something that I talk about in the first chapter of the book, Step 1, Living on Purpose. I have a thing called a life map, where on a single piece of paper, you capture your highest level life goals and all the major areas of your life, the different projects that you have going under every area, and the major things you're trying to achieve. And then underneath that, it goes all the way down to here's the specific items that I'm working on. And I filter my to-do list using my life map. My life map tells me what's important and how all those pieces fit into my life. And then the to-do list gives me a set of specific actions I can take related to those pieces. And I then get to decide in the context of my life, which areas do I want to make progress on today? And those are the to-do items that I'll pull out and look for when I'm scanning to see what's important.
Really, really powerful. It's funny you should mention this because I'm currently in the process right now of working with some technology that we built in-house that's a task list. And I want to ask you about it, and I want to see if your book and or your fabulous abilities could help with this. I think it'll be a good challenge for you. So I read a book years ago called Bit Literacy. Have you ever taken a look at that book?
I have not heard of it. Bit Literacy?
Yes. It's called Bit Literacy. It's by Mark Hurst, who wrote a really great documentary and took on some of the very challenges you have, namely, lots of data coming at us from lots of different angles, email, voicemail, faxes, phone calls. How do you store it all, prioritize it all? How do you organize your life? I mean, similar challenges that you're bringing on. And there are a lot of systems and programs that people are using to keep track of things. 37 Signals, I'm sure you know the company. Boot camp, task management, super complicated, even going back to some of the old day timer programs. Anyway, to make a long story short, his methodology focused on a really, really simple task list, a to-do list, if you will, that allowed you to see your tasks in the course of each day and move them around. And what he suggests is that you should only have tasks on your today's task list that that you can accomplish in the course of one day, right? And everything else you should move off into future dates.
Uh-huh.
And get them off your screen. So psychologically, each day you can go on and feel happy about that. What are your thoughts on that type of automatic task list? And by the way, have you heard of a task list called Tuke's Dukes? Have you ever seen Tuke's Dukes?
No.
The
images that come to mind, I'm suddenly thinking of an old video game called Duke Nukem 3D, but I'm going to guess it's not the same thing.
So this is pretty cool. It's TeuxDeux.com, okay? And a very, very cool little technology platform that you can tap into, which hundreds and thousands of people are using. It's really cool. And it has, Monday, there's a little video that people listening in could chime into, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. You probably don't have time to check the video out, but you can see on the homepage there that there are little tasks and there are little boxes, and you can move the boxes around from day to day or move them way in advance, or you can move them down to someday in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm convinced that this little business model that you see here on this website was pulled from a book called Bit Literacy, because I first read Bit Literacy like 3 or 4 years ago, and they had a free technology platform very similar to this. And the concept was, don't color code your tasks or try to get too fancy with all your tasks. Just figure out what you want to do today, come up with some tasks, describe what you want to do, and move them in the order you want to get them on, allocate the number of amount of time it's going to take to do them, and just get your stuff done. Like, keep it simple, stupid, sort of a concept. What
Yep.
are your thoughts on this sort of approach to managing your life?
That's probably the best way of, thinking about how I manage my life. I essentially do a lot of that with my daily list. And, in essence, everything that I don't pull out for today's list is the stuff that gets pushed off to the future. I'll tell you, there's a couple of things that I have a problem with any electronic solution to the to-do list. And this just may have to do with how I personally work, which is that when I put something in the to-do list system, I assume that means I will eventually get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is often not anything that forces me to reevaluate everything that's in it and get rid of the stuff that no longer applies. There's no forcing mechanism to say, you know what, this has been on my to-do list for the last 9 months. It's never going to get done. No matter how much I may think I want it, just drop it.
Mm.
So when I use any electronic system, I always end up just accumulating more and more and more and more stuff
mm-hmm.
that are all good ideas when I have them, but my life, I just don't have enough time in my life to do them all, even if I really were committed to all of them, which,
mm-hmm.
In the instant I'm thinking them up, I feel like I'm committed to them. But, when I look at my behavior, I obviously never get to some of them ever, while others are always showing up when I pull out the things that are important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the basic idea of figure out what you're going to do today and the order you're going to do it in, and then kind of push other stuff off to someday or tomorrow or a specific day, love that concept. And in fact, I don't even push things off to a specific day, generally speaking. Either it goes on my calendar, or it's on my little today list, or it's in my big master list. The big master list for me, that's all my someday list.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing something very similar on paper to what you're describing. The piece that for me makes this more effective is if you have some idea of what your major goals are in life and you keep matching the two against each other.
Yes.
Your life may be really different from mine, but I find that when I get home and there's a dozen bills on the table and people wanting something and four email requests for something that's easy for me to respond to and something I might even want to respond to, I quickly fill up all of my available time with to-do items that any one of which seems reasonable or like something that would be quick and easy to do, but together they fill up everything from now until I'm going to go to sleep tonight. And it's only the discipline, which, you know, I would love to say I'm a stellar example of this. I am an okay example of this. It is the discipline to stop, step back, and revise what you're currently doing to make sure that what you're currently doing really is connected with those higher level goals. That's the piece that will make it so that your to-do list, whatever system you use, helps you make progress. Because otherwise, you just risk spending a lot of time making progress not in the direction that's most important to you to go. Does that make sense?
It does. I already feel better about my life, but let's see if we can make it even a little bit better after we take a break here. Back everyone in a second after a quick break. Thanks.
And now back to Life Tips. Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Hey, Joel Kalm here, and I want you to hear something. That's my ka-ching button, and it's the universal sound of success. Sounds good, doesn't it? How would you like to hear that ka-ching sound all the time? In my new book, Ka-ching, How to Run an Online Business That Pays and Pays, I lay out a strategy and a plan for you to create your own online success. Get your copy today at kachingbook.com, and I'll give you a ka-ching button for free. All the details are there at kachingbook.com. That's kachingbook.com.
Our clients have earned over $1 billion. Now it's your turn. With over 20,000 products to promote across a huge variety of niches, ClickBank provides countless ways for any affiliate to make money. You can promote any product immediately. No contracts required. Looking for recurring commissions? Upsell products? ClickBank's got them. And best of all, you can make up to 75% commissions. Ready to become the next ClickBank success story? Sign up now for free at ClickBank.com.
Looking for an affiliate network that can package every solution an advertiser or publisher needs in one account? Your one-stop source for full-server solutions is AdMedia.com. AdMedia delivers an incredible lineup of specialized XML feeds for local, social, and search, plus the advertising arsenal of PPC, SEM, contextual, display, and more. AdMedia gives your campaign real visibility, from emailers to domain redirects. AdMedia tailors your all-in-one campaign to give your account a real advantage. AdMedia.com delivers cost-effective ad solutions with real conversions. Learn everything AdMedia can do for you today. Sign up at AdMedia.com. AdMedia, strong ROI made simple.
Rock the world with LinkedIn. Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Internet Marketing Channel. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm here with Stever. Stever, welcome back.
Thank you much.
So some real complexities you're taking on and a lot of pressure creating the book, namely how to make someone's life a little bit more productive and better and work smarter and faster and wiser. Tell us the reception of the book so far. You've got a big audience, obviously, you market to, but have you had people hug you in the hallways? Or tell us about the praise, because you're really, truly changing people's lives with a book of this nature.
Well, I'll tell you the limited data that I have so far. The launch party bookstore sold out of books at the launch party, which they say almost never happens. I have a bunch of reviews on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, and Audible.com that are all 5-star. Haven't gotten anything, at least last time I checked, I hadn't gotten anything less than that yet. And last night, a friend of mine was in New York and standing in line for an event, and he mentioned to somebody that that he mentioned Steve Robbins in this new book, and somebody overheard him and went, oh my God, that book is so fabulous, it changed my life. So, it appears to be going well. I'm, from my point of view, you know, I'm sitting alone in my office doing radio interviews, so I don't exactly see the streets thronging with hordes of admirers, but apparently they're out there somewhere, if only I had their phone number.
Well, they'll find you, hopefully, with shows like this and many others as a way to connect with you, because it's great stuff you're doing. Maybe you could explain how the decision, you know, the decision-making process works, if you will, with what you say yes to and what you say no to on your list, and the sort of the pre-deciding that goes on with what's hot and what's not.
Sure. Well, pre-deciding is one of the things that I talk about in staying organized, and it's about making your decision. It's about the optimizing chapter. It's about making decisions happen faster, because one of the places I noticed that I spend a lot of time and a lot of people spend time is in making decisions over and over and over and over. So let's combine this with the very conversation we were having and say, how do I make a decision about what to include on my daily to-do list? I use two kinds of criteria, absolute yeses and absolute nos. An absolute yes, I decide in advance if I have a decision to make. I say, is there anything that would make a candidate for the decision an absolute yes? Let's say I'm buying a car and I put together an absolute yes list. And on my list is any car that is a 5-speed manual transmission that gets over 20 miles to the gallon and is less than 10 years old. First car I find like that, it's just an absolute yes. I'm just going to take it. So I put together these criteria for determining when the answer is automatically yes, and I just don't have to think any further. Then when I go out to car lots and I'm evaluating cars and looking at used car lots or browsing Craigslist or looking online in other places where I can look at used cars, as soon as I find something that meets something on my absolute yes list, I just take it, it's done, and I move on with my life. Simplifies my need to gather lots of options and try to find the best one. I decide what my minimum is, it's my absolute yes, and I take it. For my to-do list, for example, any to-do item which has to do with actual money, because I am running a business, so anything that has to do with receiving money or paying money that has a deadline of today, that is an absolute yes. That always goes on my today's list. So when I'm scanning my to-do list, I don't have to evaluate every single item on the to-do list and go, oh, should I include this, should I not? Anything that falls under those categories, I instantly know this goes on today's list, period. Don't have to think about it twice. Then I also have an absolute no list. And that's the same thing, but for disqualifying candidates. So for example, one of the things that I have an employee who does is a lot of marketing and monitoring web traffic and things like that. If I were hiring someone else for that job, one of the absolute no criteria might be if this person was not computer literate. And it doesn't matter how fabulous they are in every other dimension, if they're not computer literate, they are absolutely wrong for the job, and I can quickly just disqualify them. So when someone comes into my office to interview for a job, I have my list of absolute no criteria. I say, hey, are you computer literate? And they say, no. And I say, thank you very much. Go find another job. That's what pre-deciding is. You make your list of criteria that will be an immediate yes and your list of criteria that's an immediate no. And when you're evaluating your decision, you just look down your criteria list. And if it's an immediate yes, you take it. And if it's immediate no, you discard it. And anything that isn't one of those two, then you have to fall back on making a more detailed, thorough decision.
Tell us a little bit about the physical workspace. Many people believe that, you know, they're quote organized if they have a neat physical space. But I think what you're saying is that's not always the case. Can you describe what you're saying and how important organization is?
Yes. Well, I've spent a significant portion of my life with a very messy workspace, so I had to invent some kind of concept that would allow me to rescue my self-esteem while still recognizing that I'm actually effective with a messy workspace. So I draw a distinction between neat and organized. What organized means is you have a place for everything and everything gets put in its place. What neat means is you have clear surfaces in your office. Those two statements actually have nothing to do with one another. You can be neat and not organized, and you can be organized and not neat. The key is, when you need to do something, are you going to spend a lot of your time searching for the tools you need to do it, or can you go straight there? Personally, I am not very neat, but I am very organized. So if someone says, oh my gosh, we need a pen, I know right where the pens are. The pens are in that plastic cup that's over there to the left, right next to the pile of dirty clothes, slightly to the right of the old toner cartridges that I haven't gotten around to recycling yet. And if I need a pen, I am there instantly. No requirement to be hunting and searching. I have friends who have very neat offices, and you say, do you have a pen? And they open one very neat drawer, and they look, and they go, I'm not sure. And they open another very neat drawer, and they say, oh, it should be around here somewhere. And they open a third one. They're very neat, but not organized. Personally, I think that being organized, you can be neat and organized also, but being organized is better, because if you're organized, even if you're not neat, it means you don't spend your time hunting for stuff. You know where it is. You grab it when you need it. You put it away when you're done, and life is good.
Shortest path between two points might be through the jungle, in other words.
Yes.
Part of working less and doing more is building strong relationships. How does having good relationships with others help you save time and energy and effort?
Well, unless you are very unusual or work alone far away from other people are almost always deeply involved in what you do. Even me as a writer, when I was writing this book, I would think, oh, I'm so isolated because I'm sitting alone in my office writing a book. But in fact, I had editors, I had a publisher, I had an agent, I had people who I had worked with to develop some of these techniques. There were a lot of people involved in the process. If you have good relationships with them, frankly, they'll help you out. And if you need something and it's a priority, they'll drop what they're doing to help. And if something goes wrong and you need them to cover for you, they'll cover for you. And then even more so, depending on the type of relationship, if you need them to step in and do some of the work with you, if you've got good, strong relationships, you may be able to do that. So you have a good, close working relationship with someone, you come to them and say, you know what, I just can't handle my current project. And they say, well, gee, I have some free time in my schedule. You know, let's make it a joint project and we can share in the rewards and we can also share in the work. And you can find that a strong relationship helps you in those direct ways. And then obviously in the indirect ways, right, if you have a good relationship with your boss, that's probably going to be way better for getting promotions and for career advancement and so on and so forth. Relationships are really, they're not optional in the world today, but they're also not as obvious because we take them for granted when we have them. And when we don't have them, we rarely stop and think, gee, what I'm missing is relationships. We tend to think what I'm missing is, you know, a sports car. So we buy one of those and then wonder why it doesn't solve our problem.
Here on Webmaster Radio, as you can imagine, we talk about optimization a lot. However, we don't talk about people optimization. Can you talk a little bit about your great chapter on how you advise people on how to optimize? And that includes, of course, you know, getting great feedback from people and calling in experts and, you know, keeping people, you know, keep up. Anyway, describe a little bit about optimization because it's a great piece.
Sure. When I learned about business process optimization and they drew, you know, these little boxes and arrows, I was always amazed. I'm like, where are the people? Last time I checked, businesses were made out of people, and the business process optimizing people never put them in the picture. Well, I put them in the picture. You know, if somebody insults you and they criticize you and they say that your work is crap and blah, 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 how could you do that? Most of us get really defensive when that happens. And we say, no, it isn't. I worked long and hard on that, blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? They might be right. And if you're looking for ways to improve your life, one of the best ways I know of is when somebody insults something you do or they criticize or they give you negative feedback, stop and consider they may be right. Because if they are and you get defensive, you're missing an opportunity to optimize what you're doing and to do it a lot better. And you know what? If they're not right, then at least if you consider it seriously, you'll find that out and then you don't have to take them seriously anymore when the next time they insult you. But one of the first steps to optimizing your life is to decide which areas of your life you're not doing well. And, you know, the I don't know any way to find a blind spot except when someone else points it out to you. Because by definition, it's a blind spot. It's not something you would ever recognize about yourself. So use people who criticize you as your best friends because they will show you the opportunities for optimization in your life. You know, but then the question becomes, okay, let's say someone said my reports stink because they're too disorganized, so I need to learn to write better. Who am I going to choose to learn from? Because I can buy books, but books were written by people. I can take classes. Classes are taught by people. And a lot of us choose experts based upon who's the most famous or who has the most money. You know, I'm always amazed that people consider Bill Gates a good programmer. I'm like, no, he's the richest man in the world. What has that got to do with computer programming? He's an executive. You know, he's not a programmer. But people don't think that. They think, oh, if this person's rich, they must know what they're talking about. Not necessarily. When you're choosing your experts, the people you want to talk to is not the expert to find out how knowledgeable they are. You want to talk to people like you who are starting in roughly the same place that you are, that expert has worked with before, and find out, is this expert somebody who can take someone like you and help you reach your goals? Because there's a lot of people out there who are experts who believe their own PR and think they know what they're doing, but all they know is how they reached their goals. They don't necessarily know how to help you reach your goals. And you can waste an awful lot of time and money hanging out with an expert who's great at what they do, but who can't translate that into your life worth a darn.
You advocate a certain sort of time-saving method that you call leverage. Could you explain that a little bit and elaborate on that?
Sure. Leverage is the basic idea that you can put in a little bit of work and get a really big result at the end of it. In the internet age, one of the obvious examples of leverage is being able to send things out to very large numbers of people, which means if I want to start a movement and I have 100,000 Facebook followers or Twitter followers, all I have to do is send out one or two messages on my wall, and the next thing you know, I have people dressing up as zombies marching through downtown cities all over the world. In that case, the leverage comes from the vast fan out, the number of people that I can reach. I only do the same amount of work I would do if I were sending an invitation to one friend, but I do that work in such a way, I do that same amount of work, that one message, so it goes out to gazillions and gazillions of people. And leverage is it's looking for opportunities like that anywhere and everywhere in your life. I can kind of tell you about my favorite leverage example, which happened while I was writing the leverage chapter. One of my techniques in the leverage chapter is combining efforts. So if you take two goals that you have that might be very, very, they might have nothing to do with each other, and try to brainstorm one task you can take or one project you can do that will make progress on both goals. And for various reasons, I decided that I wanted to do musical theater about a year ago, but I was also in the middle of writing a book and planning for a book launch. And so I wrote these two things at the top of a piece of paper, and I said, how in the world could I do musical theater and prepare for a book launch, especially a business book on personal productivity? And I said, you know what? What if I wrote a one-man musical about personal productivity? I could use that to promote the book, and it would help me do like fun, happy musical theater stuff. And I thought this was—I didn't think this was anything more than an idle threat. And then I called a friend of mine and said, "You'll never believe this bizarre idea that I just came up with." And it turns out my friend, unbeknownst to me, is a professor of musical theater composition at NYU. So we're actually writing the musical. It's about 2/3 of the way done, even as we speak, and it will be the world's first one-man musical about personal productivity, and it came about as a direct result of the leverage chapter.
Wow. We can't wait to learn more about that. Please let us know how we can help get people access to that, if there's anything they can do or see or see somewhere sometime. Before we get to 5 or 10 tips that you created, which are really amazing, and I want you to buzz through them, you know, what is one thing that the audience could do right now, right this second, to be more productive in less time with less work?
One thing right now, since you're an online show, I'm not sure you're going to like this answer, but one of the things you can do to immediately increase your productivity is take your computer and move it to a desk near you, but not your desk, and do your work on paper. Unless it explicitly requires a computer. And if it does, write down what the task is, walk to the computer, do the one task, and come back to your desk. Because for most people who I know, and by the way, by computer, I also include PDAs, iPhones, and Blackberries in that. Most people these days, the number one productivity destroyer in their lives is their PDA and their computer, because they have so many distractions on them that people just end up spending their time immersed in the distractions rather than being immersed in the in the productivity that they really are supposed to be engaged in.
Are you at all concerned that people are feeling productive at the end of work days, yet really are not productivity at the end of work days. And employers like me that are, you know, paying salaries and compensations to people are employing people that think they're busy all day every day, but are not efficient and effective all day. Is that a concern for overall corporate America?
I think it really is a concern for overall corporate America for a couple of reasons. There are a couple of reasons why this is the case. One is that it's the living on purpose concept, that people are doing stuff that keeps them busy and feels busy, but isn't actually tightly enough linked to the goals of themselves and the organization to be making forward progress. So they're confusing movement with productivity. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is multitasking. Multitasking has gained tremendous popularity. Everyone is like, oh, I'm an expert multitasker, blah, 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 blah. Well, multitasking makes us feel very productive. But all of the research that has been done on multitasking shows that by objective measures, people get less done when they multitask than when they pay attention to one thing at a time. And in fact, there's some research that came out earlier this year that is especially concerning because it shows that the more someone multitasks, instead of getting better at multitasking, which you might think, and that was what they were trying to measure, was can you practice multitasking to get better at it? Not only do people get worse at multitasking the more they do it, they get worse at everything. Multitasking actually degrades your ability to function, which is really kind of scary because we're all trying to do it. We're kind of racing to the bottom.
Can you comment on headphone sets during the day and or listening to radio shows while you're trying to work on your computer? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I think that I'm not stupid. Of course, turn your computer off and listen to the radio show, for goodness sake, especially Life Tips Radio. but other radio shows, actually, that I don't know the research on. I know that I had read some stuff a while back where they gave people problems to solve and had some people play music and some people not. And they found that even though the people who played the music, they didn't finish things slower. So apparently, you know, which would suggest that, gee, playing music is fine while you're working. They didn't come up with as creative solutions as the people who didn't listen to music around whatever the problems were. And I always thought that was interesting. So, because I love to do work to music. To me, music is a significant part of my day. And that study suggested that although music doesn't slow you down the way that multitasking might, music does seem to occupy part of your brain that otherwise would be busy coming up with really creative ideas. Then, of course, there's a question of, are you in a job where having lots of really creative ideas all the time actually matters that much? And there's plenty of people who aren't, in which case I say, vive la music!
There was a study done many, many years ago by the University of Vermont Nursing School that I remember reading about in grad school in London, and it talked of all places a Vermont nursing program. That's what struck me as odd, going to school in London. But it talked about listening. It talked about studying for examinations and comprehension level. And how comprehension level decreases, as you can well imagine, after long periods of time of study transpire. Yep. This study conducted with a wide variety of people concluded that if you study for 50 minutes and take a 10-minute break, and of all things listen to Baroque music for 10 minutes, which is impossible to listen to and not completely remove your mind from what you were studying, and then return to your study, you will do better on your exams. Do you have any thoughts on that rather interesting conclusion, the effect of taking a break from either studying and or other intense activity you're doing?
You know, yes. In fact, there's a book called The Power of Full Engagement by Tony Schwartz, which started off as... or Tony Schwartz's research started off looking at peak athletes and then wondering if the kinds of energy modulating tactics that athletes used, if that translated into other types of work like office work. And they concluded that it did. And one of the things they found was that people work better when they have periodic recharge time. So if you work for 50 minutes and then rest for 10 minutes and then work for 50 and rest for 10, and I'm not so sure I don't know if the Baroque music is necessary or not. You will still get more done than if you tried to work that same amount of time straight through. And it seems counterintuitive because you would seem to be missing this 10-minute gap at the top of every hour. But missing that gap gives your brain a chance to recharge so that you are much more productive the following hour. That is the claim. Since I don't know the research, I can't speak to the research. I know that for me, I intellectually understand that, and I have an annoying tendency to push myself to work for solid four-hour blocks anyway. And I wish I didn't, because I think that taking time off and resting and relaxing is at least healthy, if not actually contributing to productivity directly.
I want you to buzz through your tips, if you could, quickly. I'm sorry, we don't have a lot of time left, but this has been such a great show with you, and you've offered such good insight. Buzz people through some of your favorite tips here that you've provided to us, if you could.
Absolutely. Tip one is divorce your technology. Instead of thinking of your computer as a place where you hang out, think of your computer as a tool that you use to solve specific tasks. Use it. Put it down when you're done. Pick it up when you have to solve that task, but don't just think of it as a default place to sit and kind of, muck around. Tip two is stop procrastinating by using other people to help hold you accountable. I had a woman ask me last night at a book reading, how can I get started on this horrible stuff that I just have been procrastinating for years? Call your best friend. Tell your best friend, you know what? I'm having trouble getting started on my taxes this year. Could you come over and make me do it? And if your best friend really is a good friend, they'll say yes. And if they say no, find a new best friend, because you really need to swap that one out. Three, if you don't have other people handy, stop procrastinating by speed dating your tasks. Speed dating your tasks is a cool technique I learned. I learned it ages ago and then had it really deepened for me by a man named Michael Forster, who wrote a whole book that takes the concept to a whole new level. The idea is real simple. You procrastinate things because you build them up to be gigantic things in your mind. Get an egg timer, set it for 5 minutes, make a list of the top five things you're procrastinating, turn on the egg timer, work on the first one for 5 minutes. When the buzzer goes off, stop immediately, go to the next one. 5 minutes, stop until you've done one rotation with all five, then give yourself a 10-minute break, and then do it again. And what happens is you build up momentum, and then instead of doing 5 minutes, set the egg timer for 10 minutes. Instead of doing 10 the following time, then set it for 15. And even though you started off by procrastinating all of those tasks, once you speed date them a couple of times, it's amazing. Your brain gets in the groove, and you can really hammer through them. Tip four, organize your brain by having a place for everything and everything in its place. And I alluded to that earlier, that it's the difference between being organized and being neat. If there's stuff that's laying around and you don't know what it is, stop and think about it for a minute and go, oh, look, here's a weird tube of hair gel. Gee, I need a place for this. Maybe I'll put it in the bathroom. Instead of just letting it keep laying around. Then create a place for things that have no place. Sometimes there are just those odd things that come into your life for a little while and you don't know where the heck you should put them. Great. Have a box where you put all that weird crap you have no other place for, and then throw it out after 6 months because you'll probably never look at it again. Tip five, for decisions you expect to make over and over, think through your decision criteria beforehand and create your absolute yes and absolute no lists. And we talked about that. Know what you're looking for when you're making a decision and know what you're not looking for and use those to filter your options. That's another way of saying the same thing. Six, form strong relationships by having regular contact with people over time. Frequency trumps duration. If you want to form a good relationship with somebody, arrange to see them briefly 15 times, and you will end up closer and more a part of each other's lives than if you see each other once and have, a deep, meaningful conversation until deep into the night. Relationships come from repeated contact. And by the way, there's actually some sociology research and stuff that backs this up, right? The people in an office that are the most popular people tend to be the ones in the high traffic areas. Why? Because people just see them all the time. Relationships are built in part by repeated contact. So if you want to form a strong relationship, arrange to have a lot of repeated contact. And then last but certainly not least, listen to feedback, even if it's critical. It just may have something that you can learn from. And if it does, it's worth learning. And if it doesn't, it's worth learning that, because then you know that this source of feedback isn't one that you want to give a lot of weight to.
Stephen Robbins, great. Yes. Steve, really great having you on the show today. The book, again, is Get It Done, Guys, 9 Steps to Work Less and Do More. The author is Steve Robbins. Steve, how do you want people to get a hold of you?
Well, you can find me on the web at steverrobbins.com or also worklessanddomore.com. And right now they both go to the same website.
Got it. And is there a way to connect with you any other way? Are you writing another book? Do you want ideas? Do you want people? How do you want people to reach out to you?
Oh, good heavens. Well, you can send me email through the contact form on my website. You can find me on Facebook. Search for the Get It. Just go to facebook.com/Get It Done Guy, all one word. So facebook.com/Get It Done Guy. I'm not at the moment writing another book because I'm just too busy promoting this one. However, I am always looking for ideas for my podcast, which is it's usually in the business, the top 10 business podcasts, and it's called The Get It Done Guy's Quick and Dirty Tips to Work Less and Do More. And it's a 5-minute podcast, very funny, and very useful, very practical. And I'm always looking for tips and things to share, or if people have problems that they would like a tip for, send those in. And again, the best way to do that is to go to my website and use the contact form or to post something on my Facebook page.
Well, thanks again for being on the show, Steve. I really enjoyed every minute of it.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, indeed. Until next week, everyone, I hope your life is, without a doubt, smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Thanks to Seaver. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week.